All right, we are in our final day of a financial series we've been doing, and I want to tell you something. I am convinced that if you take some of the practical stuff we've been talking about and some of the heart stuff we talk about today and you put it all together, I am convinced that God wants to give you a financial future beyond what you've ever dreamed of. And I am excited to see how that unfolds in your life. So I am also convinced of something else. I am convinced that you are going to have every reason to possibly be distracted while I'm talking over the next couple of minutes, because I am convinced that there is a very real enemy who does not want you thinking about what I am about to say. Because this is truth from God's word that can powerfully change your life. And so if you think of something you've got to do right now, I want you to know you can wait a couple of minutes. And if you're thinking to yourself, suddenly there's going to be a moment where you're going to think to yourself, oh, I have got to go to the restroom right now. And I want you to know you can hold it. I believe in you. And you're going to think to yourself, oh, I forgot to tell my neighbor this thing right before service started. I want you to know, if you forget it between now and the end of service, it wasn't that important anyway. Because what God wants to do in your life and in your finances today is so important. I don't want any one of you to miss this. So I want you to look at your neighbor and say, do not, under any circumstances, distract me from this point on. There you go. And now I want you to think without saying very loudly, that is the last time I talk to my neighbor for the next 30 minutes. You're saying it out loud. Why are you saying it out loud? So we've talked over the last couple of weeks, for those of you who haven't been with us, about some very practical pieces of wisdom that God gives us for dealing with our finances. And today I want to add one final piece to this, and that is a focus on perspective or heart when we're dealing with finances. Our perspective is incredibly important. I have been often struck by this, but I was really struck by this this week as I was walking down Monroe Street, where our Lynn location is. I was walking down, I always park a couple of blocks away, and so I was walking down the street, and it just flashed through my mind all of the different times I have been on Monroe Street. You see, my first experiences of Monroe Street had nothing to do with East Coast International Church. As a matter of fact, my first job in Lynn was on Monroe Street. It was for Gordon College. We were helping get volunteers involved in lots of nonprofits here in the city. And so the office I worked in was just down the street on the other side of the street. And my boss had stepped out my very first day at work. I had been working there just long enough to successfully connect my laptop to the printer. And my boss was gone. I was the only one in the office. And a group of volunteers walked in. And this was my second time ever being in Lynn. And the leader of the volunteers said, hey, we need some directions from here to Catholic Charities. I had no idea where Catholic Charities was. But I had connected my laptop. So it being quite a while ago, I went to MapQuest.com. And I started looking up directions. And I typed in Monroe Street, which is not how you spell Monroe Street. Needless to say, MapQuest couldn't give me directions from Monroe Street to anywhere because it wasn't a real street. And so there I sat in front of the volunteers without any clue where I was, or any idea how to get them where they were going. To this day, as far as I can tell, they all think I'm an idiot. And that was my first experience, my first perspective on Monroe Street. But fast forward a couple years later, I was no longer working in that office, but I happened to have an apartment on Monroe Street, a second floor apartment. In the building I was living in, the apartment had these giant glass windows overlooking Monroe Street. And I was so excited because this particular week, several years after that first experience, for the first time I had ever known, they were filming a movie right outside my apartment. And so there it was. It was a movie called The Surrogates, starring Bruce Willis. And they used Monroe Street for this one particular scene where they were going to be doing a car chase. And this particular 3 to 4 second scene in the movie was a moment when a motorcycle zooms down the street. And so they started at the beginning of the day. They closed Monroe Street down. They started this really amazing looking black motorcycle on one side of the street. It flew down Monroe Street. And then they cut. And they backed it back up down Monroe Street. And it flew down Monroe Street again. And all the while, there are like hundreds of very fancy looking people standing around doing absolutely nothing. And for the next 2.5 days, as long as there was light, that motorcycle went back and forth up and down Monroe Street over and over and over again. And it was the coolest thing I had ever seen in my life. Fast forward another 10 years or thereabouts. And just this last weekend, I had to go up on the roof of our Monroe Street location. And I took a picture while I was up there of the street. And I have realized that Monroe Street has come to be one of my favorite streets in the entire world. But it's not just because it's a beautiful street. It's not because of the architecture. It's because as I stood up there on a very tall building and looked around, I thought to myself, you know, I know somebody who lives in that apartment building right there. And I know somebody who lives in that building right over there. And I know somebody who lives in that building right over there. And that one. And that one. And I looked over to one side and I saw the school, Ingalls Elementary School, where East Coast International Church first started. And I looked in the other direction and I saw Revere, where our newest location is, and where God is suddenly doing an amazing new work. And I realized that Monroe Street is one of my all-time favorite streets because it symbolizes to me all of the people that I know and love who are a part of East Coast International Church. And I thought to myself as I was up there hanging dangerously over the edge of the building trying to get that picture for you that it's all about perspective. And there is nothing in which this is more true than our experience of money. You see, if you are going to have a fear response or a hopeful response to finances, if you are going to experience confusion or joy in your finances, once you have the basic tools, and we've talked about those basic tools for the last 3 weeks, once you have those basic tools, it all depends on the heart or spirit that you have towards finances. And so this week I want to talk about 3 different spirits that people bring towards their finances. The first is what I would call a spirit of pride. I want to read to you a story from the Bible. I'm actually going to read to you 2 different stories. Both of these are from the Gospels. They're stories that happened in the life of Jesus. They both happened in the home of Jesus' dear friends, who were all siblings, Lazarus, Mary, and Martha. And I'll be honest, I don't know if this is 2 retellings of the same story or if this is 2 tellings of a very similar event that happened. Because Lazarus, Mary, and Martha all lived right near Jerusalem, and it was probably pretty likely that Jesus would pop into their house every time he was traveling to Jerusalem. And so I don't know if this is just two separate stories or one, but either way, I want you to hear them and listen for the spirit that drives the various characters in the story. Here's the first story, Luke chapter 10. It says this, as Jesus and his disciples continued on their way to Jerusalem, they came to a certain village where a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home. Her sister Mary sat at the Lord's feet, listening to what he taught. But Martha was distracted by the big dinner she was preparing. She came to Jesus and said, Lord, doesn't it seem unfair to you that my sister here just sits while I do all the work? Tell her to come and help me. But the Lord said to her, my dear Martha. By the way, hear the tenderness in that. My dear Martha, you are worried and upset over all these details. There is only one thing worth being concerned about. Mary has discovered it, and it will not be taken away from her. Jesus is in Martha's living room. He is having deep conversation. He is sharing and teaching with a group of people who are gathering together to listen to him. And Mary is one of them. Martha, on the other hand, is trying, I think, to be a good host. She's concerned with all the details. She's concerned with making sure that everything's set up right. She's concerned with making sure the meal is just right. She's concerned with all sorts of things. But more than that, she is also concerned with the fact that other people aren't concerned about what she's concerned about. And this is the spirit of pride. This spirit often comes out of people when they're dealing with money. It starts off with a sense of, I'm working hard. I've earned it. It's mine. And it moves from there to a sense of entitlement. I deserve a better car. I deserve a better apartment. I deserve a nicer TV or nicer clothes. And it moves from there. You can see really where it's coming from. It comes deep in someone's heart from a sense of worth that is based on what? Based on performance. Look at me. I'm important. I'm valuable. I'm significant because I'm trying hard. Because I'm hardworking. And even beyond that, it keeps moving. It moves from just, please value me because I'm hardworking, to now stop valuing them because they're not. It's an elitism, a sense of being judgmental. It's that voice that whispers in some of our heads, I'm worthwhile because I work hard. Therefore, if they're not working hard, they're not worthwhile. I deserve something because I'm working hard. If they're not working hard, they don't deserve anything. Whenever I think about this particular spirit, I'm specifically reminded of what my grandfather could have been. See, my grandfather was one of the greatest advocates of hard work I have ever met. During economic upturns, he was fully employed. And straight through economic downturns, he was fully employed. And he was the first man to say, I am not employed because I'm smarter than anybody else, because I'm not. And he was the first one to admit he wasn't employed because he had better qualifications than anyone else, because I don't think he finished high school. He would say over and over again, I have built a reputation for being a hard worker. And so when there's a job to do, they call me. What did he do? He installed hardwood floors. Month after month, year after year, decade after decade. Thousands of hardwood floors. We would go into all sorts of places, from gyms to restaurants to neighborhoods. And it would be the same comment everywhere we went. I installed that floor. That one was my guy's. We did that one. Some of those floors would be 40 years old. Some of them would be brand new. And so when he met a guy named Joey, who was 17, my papa, he could have had a spirit of pride. You see, my papa was in his van picking up a guy who lived next door to take him to work. And Joey was sitting on the curb at 7 o'clock in the morning doing absolutely nothing. And later that day, when Papa came and dropped his guy off, there was Joey, still sitting on the curb, 17 years old, doing absolutely nothing. Day after day, for several weeks, my Papa saw Joey sitting there, doing nothing, at the beginning of the day and the end of the day. And for a man who valued hard work, it would have been very easy for him to think to himself, well, you know what? I'm working hard. He's being a lazy guy. I'm going to end up successful. He's going to end up a failure. And we're all going to get exactly what we deserve. But fortunately, many years before this, my grandfather had encountered Jesus. And he had found out that Jesus offered him a grace and a love and a forgiveness that he didn't deserve, and that it had given his life meaning that he didn't know he could have. And so when he saw Joey sitting there day after day, week after week, eventually something in his spirit snapped, and he got out of the truck one day, and he looked at Joey and he said, "You are getting in my truck right now. And I don't care if I take you to school or if I take you to the job, but you are not sitting around anymore." And I do not know if Joey got in that truck or if Joey got thrown in that truck, because that's sort of the reputation my papa had. But I know Joey got in that truck that day and he went to work for the first time. And my grandfather started teaching him a trade. And he was in work the next day. And he got picked up the day after that. And the day after that. For weeks and weeks, month after month, year after year, my grandfather picked him up, took him to work, gave him a trade. When the time came for my grandfather to retire, he handed the business over to this guy named Joey. I learned all of this. I'd heard bits and pieces. But I learned all of this as Joey wept at my grandfather's funeral, as he was the last man to leave the service. All the family had said goodbye, but Joey was having a real hard time saying goodbye to the man who had found him broken on the side of the street and given him a trade, because Joey knew that when he drove home from that, he was going to drive home to his nice house in a nice neighborhood where his kids went to a nice school, where his family was stable and safe and healthy, because somebody threw him in a truck one day and said, "You are worth it." Instead of saying, "I'm working hard and you're not, and I'm going to get what I deserve and so are you." If my grandfather had lived with a spirit of pride, that kid named Joey would not have had a future. Sometimes we live in our financial lives with a spirit of pride, but sometimes we live our financial lives with a spirit of poverty. That same story, or maybe another time, when Jesus goes to this house, is captured in John 12, and the story goes this way. 6 days before the Passover celebration began, Jesus arrived in Bethany, the home of Lazarus, the man he had raised from the dead. A dinner was being prepared in Jesus' honor. Martha served, and Lazarus was among those who ate with him. Then Mary took a 12-ounce jar of expensive perfume made from the essence of nard, and she anointed Jesus' feet with it, wiping his feet with her hair. The house was filled with the fragrance. But Judas Iscariot, the disciple who would soon betray him, said, "That perfume was worth a year's wages. It should have been sold and the money given to the poor." Not that he cared for the poor. He was a thief. And since he was in charge of the disciples' money, he often stole some for himself. Jesus replied, "You leave her alone. She did this in preparation for my burial. You will always have the poor among you. You will not always have me." Judas lived with a spirit of poverty. A spirit of poverty is alive when we live from a place of fear and anxiety about lack. A deep-rooted belief that there can't and won't be enough for us. Perhaps that's what drove Judas to steal. This spirit of poverty, this belief that the world can't possibly have enough for me to be okay. You can see this in people who are miserly, who are driven to take quick financial shortcuts. You can see it in people who cling to everything and hold on and hoard because they believe so deeply that the nature of the universe is lacking. Lacking enough to be well, lacking enough to be healthy, lacking enough provision to have what is essential for life. Their default setting is that there never has been, never is, and never will be enough for me. And so there is no room for generosity. There is no room for the kind of gratuitous celebration we see in Mary's life in that story about Jesus. And what's amazing to me is that just like a spirit of pride leads to judging others, a spirit of poverty leads to judging others just as quickly. Spirit of pride judges those who aren't working as hard as me. A spirit of poverty judges those who have more than me. A spirit of poverty fundamentally believes that not only is the world a place defined by lack, so I can't hope to ever have enough, but since that is true, all those who do have enough must somehow be spiritually compromising or have imbalanced priorities. Because prosperity, affluence, and extravagance are fundamentally signs of sinfulness and evil. Because money is fundamentally demonic. Fortunately for us, the Bible gives us a clear way of thinking about money that is very different from this and that can capture us and rescue us from this spirit of poverty. See, the Bible teaches us that money is not evil. It's simply a tool. Just like a shovel is a tool and a knife is a tool. You can't look at a shovel and say, well, all shovels are just evil. You can't look at a knife and say, well, all knives are just evil. Tools can't be evil. They can only be used for good or for evil. And money is a tool. So we don't have to believe that money is evil. Not only does the Bible remind us about how to think about money, it also reminds us how to think about the world. Spirit of poverty believes that the world fundamentally is a place of lack, so I can't hope to ever be safe, secure, or have enough. The Bible teaches us something very different, that the world is fundamentally a good world made by a good and loving God who designed it to be a good, healthy, and safe place for his people. Therefore, the world isn't unsafe, fundamentally. The world doesn't fundamentally lack enough for you to be healthy, safe, and secure. Instead, if we experience lack, it is a result of mismanagement of resources, either ours or someone else's. But all that we need is available, and there is a good God who loves us, to whom we can call out in our time of need. The spirit of poverty has two little sisters, jealousy and envy. Jealousy says, I want what you have. Envy says, I don't think I can get what you have, so you shouldn't have it either. If you ever see these attitudes taking root in your life, you may well be dealing with a spirit of poverty. Judas is dealing with a spirit of poverty. And so when he sees Mary's generosity, instead of celebrating it, he complains about it. When he sees her worship, her extravagance, and her celebration, instead of being caught up in what should have been a powerful moment, his spirit poisons the moment for him, and he misses out on something wonderful. His self-righteous criticism robs him of a wonderful opportunity. When I think about this spirit of poverty, I often think that my mother and father could easily have gotten stuck in that camp. They could have been poisoned by that spirit. See, for my mom and dad, things didn't come easy. They had to work hard, both of them, every day of my entire childhood. My dad often was driving 2 hours one way to get to a job because that was the best job he could get. My mom would work, and then she was a teacher, and she would drag home piles of paperwork 5 times bigger than any homework I ever had as a kid. And she would sit there from the moment she got home till virtually the moment I went to bed, grading, hand grading every paper after paper after paper after paper, working and working and working day after day after day. And for all of that, there was never tons of money. My parents had to budget incredibly carefully to have enough. My parents had to work exceptionally hard and had to be exceptionally careful and had to know exactly where to pinch the pennies in order to make sure everything worked. And yet, my parents never gave in to a spirit of poverty. You see, when it came to living our life at home, they made sure that we as kids understood that anybody was always welcome in our house. No matter what we were eating, no matter what the meal was, if we couldn't get in touch with them to ask if a friend could come over, just bring the friend over. It'll be fine. And my parents made sure that they made memories with us. Whenever there was enough money, they would take us out to eat. And when there wasn't, they took us to our grandmother's house and we would just get a cheap pizza and eat that. And we certainly weren't going out to eat or buying pizza multiple times a week, but enough to make sure that memories were built. And I don't remember a year that my parents didn't make time and budget for a vacation. Now, sometimes we went to places that weren't all that spectacular. We certainly weren't flying to Disney World every year. But there was always time, and there was always money. And if they had to drive 15-year-old cars in order to make sure there was enough, then that's what they did. And if they had to scrimp and save, and literally they were the last people I ever knew to get cable, then that's what they did, because that wasn't the priority. And in all of that, my parents made sure that they didn't give in to the spirit of poverty. Why? Because my mom and dad, before I was born, had an encounter with Jesus. And they discovered that Jesus wanted to give them incredible gifts. Gifts of forgiveness and mercy and grace, of which they were completely undeserving. And God gave them freely. And so they were powerfully impacted by this last spirit that I want to talk about, which is a spirit of gratitude. a spirit of generosity. You can see this in Mary in the story I read about Jesus. She has this tremendous treasure. No one asked her to give it to Jesus. No one demanded that she give it to God. No one guilted her into it. But she had a perspective that allowed her to give freely from what she had. And this is the spirit of gratitude. This is the spirit that says, what I have isn't, it's not really mine. It's God's. And so this woman took a jar of perfume that was worth about a year's wages for an average person. Not necessarily for her, by the way. She probably made less than an average in year's income. She probably was not a big earner. So imagine for a moment, the average income for a person from Massachusetts right now is about $77,000 a year. That's true. I looked that up. Imagine owning something that is worth a year's income. One thing worth maybe $77,000. Imagine that. You would probably treasure it. You would probably value it more than you could express. There would probably be, if it were in my house, there would be like gates around it. And it would have an insurance policy on it. And I would be making super sure nobody ever touched it because I want to take good care of this one nice thing that I own. In my house where my dog likes to eat my furniture and my cat has scratched every piece of wood in the building, if I had something worth $77,000, I would be making certain that it was taken well care of. Imagine Jesus coming into your home and you looking around for just a moment and thinking to yourself, after realizing how much he loved you, how much he accepted you, how much he valued you, imagine looking around for something that you could possibly give him and your eyes land on the one thing. So you give it to him, no strings attached. He can do whatever he wants with it. It just doesn't matter. That is Mary's story. You see, a spirit of gratitude transforms and heals those of us who begin with a spirit of pride. That spirit of pride that says, I deserve this because I'm hardworking. That spirit is transformed into a spirit of gratitude when we encounter Jesus. Because you see, when anyone encounters Jesus, no matter who you are, no matter what your life story is, if you have an authentic encounter with Jesus, you will realize at least one thing, and that is that you are unworthy. You do not deserve anything from Jesus. You can't force Jesus into giving you anything. And so any chance that you are going to live from a place of pride is lost in the humility that is born in the moment you encounter Jesus. Humility heals a spirit of pride. But that same encounter with Jesus will also heal, transform, and banish the spirit of poverty. That spirit of poverty that says that I can't possibly ever have enough, and that money is evil. All of that is transformed by encountering a God who loves you so much that he delights in blessing you. And so, as our spirit of pride and spirit of poverty are transformed and healed by humility and love, we realize that all that we have is gift. And so we are released to have a spirit of gratitude. As the worship team comes forward, I have to be honest. As I thought about a story to tell you about someone with a spirit of gratitude, I realized that I couldn't. Because there is one common theme amongst men and women who have a spirit of gratitude. And that is that they are shy of the spotlight. You see, men and women who have the spirit of gratitude, they're not doing it because they want to be noticed. They don't call attention to themselves. They're doing it from a place of gratitude because they love Jesus and are grateful for all that he has done. So as you stand with me, I want to ask you this question today. I want to ask you, what about you? No matter where you're at in your finances today, do you want to live with a more joyful relationship to finances? Do you want to live with a more peaceful relationship to finances? Do you want to live with a freer relationship to finances? Because if you do, what you are longing for is a greater spirit of gratitude. You may look at your own life, and if you are painfully honest, there may be a spirit of pride in your life that leads you to value yourself based on how hard you work and to devalue our others based on whether or not they're working as hard as you think they should be. Or there may be a spirit of poverty in your life that leads you to believe that the world is unsafe and can't possibly ever have enough, and that leads you to judge others if they ever have more than you think they should. Or you may have some level of a spirit of gratitude in your life, and yet you are longing for more because you want that joy and peace and freedom. And I will tell you today, as we think back on all of the practical things we've talked about finances over the last couple of weeks, that it is a spirit of gratitude that releases you to live out the God-given wisdom about finances in the Bible. Otherwise, it is almost impossible. And so if you want the kind of financial life, the kind of blessing and hope for the future that God has for you, you are longing for a spirit of gratitude. And in just a moment, I'm going to invite you to come forward. You can come up, you can kneel down right here. And I'm inviting you to come forward and tell God that you want a greater spirit of gratitude than you've ever had before. I'm inviting you to come forward and tell God that you want to encounter him in a way that inspires humility and that inspires confidence in his love for you in a way, deeper sense than you've ever had. And in just a moment, we're going to be singing a final song. And during that song, I challenge you to talk with Jesus, to ask him to allow you to encounter him in a way that gives you humility and greater confidence in his love for you, that gives you a spirit of gratitude. But before we sing, let me pray for you. God, I pray for every man and woman in this room. I pray, Father, that whether we are coming from a place and spirit of pride or a spirit of poverty, that you would rescue and heal and transform us, God, that our lives might be marked by godly generosity. That generosity, that spirit of generosity, would allow us to be joyful in following your financial leadership, peaceful in following your financial leadership, and free in following your financial leadership. God, this we ask from you today. Thank you so much for your love and guidance. Kindness. Amen. As we wrap up our focus on finances, I want you to know that my prayer for you has been and continues to be that your lives would be so marked with godly financial wisdom and God-given financial blessing that you bring praise to God through your everyday lives and your everyday choices and your everyday lifestyle. May that be true of every one of us. It is so great to see you here today. God bless you. Say hello to the third service as they come on in, and have a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful week.